Now, Dr. Joan Kenley, psychologist and author of Whose Body Is It Anyway, brings you Conversation Radio.
Hello, I'm Joan Kenley, welcoming you to The Joan Kenley Show, bringing you Conversation Radio, a program where talking really matters. Our focus today is money matters. And there's a quote that says, it's good to have money and the things that money can buy. But it's good, too, to check up once in a while and make sure you haven't lost the things that money can't buy. So we're so thrilled today to be joined by two experts in the field of money consciousness for individuals, organizations, and communities. And we're going to take the lid off the subject of money by talking about it in relationship to green banking, financial therapy, investing with your heart, and so much more. As always, later in the program, we'll be giving you resources to consider as you go about minding your money. But I want to start by sharing with you a personal story about my grandfather, who was the founder and president of the Farmer Citizens Bank in my hometown of Bucyrus, Ohio. And his proudest moment in his whole history of being with the banking community was that he did not have to close the doors of his bank during the Depression when there was a run on banks. And so he carried that as his proud, proud moment throughout his career. And because he was so committed to the bank and so good at it, people always said about him as he grew older that he would probably die with his boots on. And indeed, he did die at a board meeting at the bank. And so I grew up being familiar with the fact that the bank was an important place to be. So we'll get into some of all of that and my relationship to money as I grew older. But first, I want to introduce you to Peter Liu, the founder and vice chairman of New Resource Bank in San Francisco, an innovative commercial bank whose primary mission is to serve the needs of green entrepreneurs and sustainable businesses. Peter has worked in the banking and energy industries for nearly two decades as a top executive for Credit Suisse First Boston and Chase Manhattan Bank, and as a private investor and strategic advisor to several clean energy technology companies. And I'd also like to welcome Barry Tesler, the founder of Conscious Bookkeeping, a team of financial therapists, financial coaches, and bookkeepers who serve people who want to transform their relationship with money. They focus on the practical, psychological, and spiritual. Barry has a master's in somatic psychology from Naropa University and works as a teacher, therapist, and speaker. She's also a featured author in the recently published anthology, Einstein's Business, a book I can highly recommend. All kinds of authors, all kinds of ways to look at money. Barry, I'd like to start by asking, what led you to create your company, Conscious Bookkeeping? What did you discover in your life that motivated you to pursue this unique idea?
In my 20s, when I went to school to be a psychotherapist, and it was an incredible training, an incredible education to be at Naropa University. And at some point along the way, I think it was when that $60,000 school loan came down and became a reality, that I looked back on my entire life and realized that there was very little education for me personally around money and finances. When I looked at my public school education, it really wasn't there. When
it wasn't in almost anybody's public school education.
You got it. Yes. And when I looked at my family, there was a little bit there. And even at this fabulous alternative graduate program where they incorporate Eastern and Western philosophies into their teaching style, we literally studied every topic under the sun. Family of origin, sexuality, food, gender, ethnicity.
But where is the money?
But where was the money? Conversations, the money questions.
Money's a secret in many families and in many conversations, isn't it?
That's what I really became aware of, was that it's one of the biggest secrets. It's one of the biggest shadow, hidden areas in our families, in our relationships, in our public school system, even in these alternative graduate school programs. It's probably the biggest shadow area, hidden area, secretive area that's being left out in the teachings, in the education.
Right. In fact, when I was a young girl, I was very outspoken, and I used to say, well, how much does that person make, Papa? And he said, you can't ask that. It's not polite. And then you sort of just say, oh, I've got to hold back. I mean, you can't talk about this.
I do think that's changing. I think it's somewhat generational. And yet, when we go back to family of origin to get some sense of what were the patterns or the messages that were being passed down that we're continuing today that are working or not working.
So the things you saw that weren't working were the things that lit your fire, that got you going about what really could work, should work, ought to work in the world of people and money.
Yes, it was such an obvious missing piece that in my own life and when I looked around that I jumped tracks.
Yeah.
And jumped to the other side.
Well, they said, look for a need and fill it in good business. And so that was a good business practice for you from the get-go.
From the get-go. Even though I wasn't aware of it, I was going by what I needed, by intuition.
Exactly.
6 years later, in retrospect, it's a fabulous,
yeah.
Very needed, timely business
and
idea.
We'll get into more about what it is later, but we want to find out, Peter, what was the criteria that you used for yourself to say, I can go toward the field of finance and money and institutions? I mean, as a young child, what drew you to this profession?
Yeah, if you asked me when I was young that I would be a banker or starting a bank, probably that would be pretty low on the list. I mean, astronauts or healing animals were higher on the list. But, my family came to this country in some ways looking for economic opportunities or a monetary opportunity. So,
And you are from where?
I'm from Taiwan.
Okay.
And so that's really how I got into, launch into sort of professional life. In fact, I started professional life working as an engineer for the Chevron Corporation in the oil industry, which is very different than my focus today. Today, what we're focusing on environmental sustainability. But mostly, I think that the transition really came, again, from the fact that as a immigrant, you are less secure about your economic place in life, and you think that the two, the sort of social aspect and the monetary aspect, has to be separated. But when, in fact, when you look at great companies that have both done well financially as well as doing good socially, the two doesn't have to be separated. And again,
how old were you when you came over?
When I was 12.
All right. So you were really going into your teen years and looking at a new country. Did you speak the language when you came here?
No.
Well, that's a big transition right there.
It's a transition, yeah. And in some ways, that kind of brings me to analogy of, you know, why it is that I do what I do today in terms of the New Resource Bank. As a banker, you know, when we lend money to people, we expect them to pay it back with both principal and interest. And when I look at the world that I live in, and I have two small children, Skylar and Sasha, ages, you know, 8 and 6, and I look at this world as I am borrowing from them.
Indeed, and that is exactly true. You
right.
are.
Yeah, and hopefully when I go, when it's my turn to go, I can pay it back to them with principal and interest, making this place a little better than when I left it. Looking at this generation that's heading into the 21st century, that's at their max earnings power, if you will, I don't know if we're doing that. The issues that we created that we didn't address in terms of climate change, the instabilities in the world, versus the generation before that conquered fascism and created equality, at least the beginning of equality amongst races. I think this generation my generation has a lot more to go in order to pay our children back with principal and interest.
Well, if we have big problems, someone said, we also have to recognize that we have big solutions happening today. When there is hope and optimism, I believe for sure that we can bring home what we want to do in the next 10 years. And that's why we're having the conversation with both of you today, because we are optimistic, but we know we have to get some action under the optimism. And so as we wrap up this segment, I'd like to share some words by David Fries, one of the other contributors in the new book, Einstein's Business, that Barry is also part of. Many of us who are socially conscious spiritually motivated, and self-aware, have sometimes mistakenly come to believe that businesses can be bad, selfish, and uncaring. But despite the misalignment of many, business itself can be sacred, in accordance with deeply held values and beliefs, to create, to receive, and to share abundance. So coming up next, we're going to talk with Barry and Peter about some of the underlying feelings and misunderstandings that people have about money and about banks. Keep listening. We'll keep talking.
You found it, and it's different. The Joan Kenley Show. What's not to love about the Joan Kenley Show, where talking truly matters.
Hello, I'm Joan Kenley, and you're listening to the Joan Kenley Show, where we're talking today about money matters. We're continuing with our guests, Peter Liu and Barry Tesler, pioneers in the field of green, sustainable banking and conscious bookkeeping. It's been said, empty pockets never held anyone back. Only empty heads and empty hearts can do that. Our relationship to money is complex, and it can be a love-hate scenario. Some people disconnect themselves from how they spend their money, putting themselves in a category of what might be called money abusers, which makes up about one quarter of the consumer population. That's amazing. So, Barry, I'd like to ask you, what tools did you discover for yourself to create your approach to emotional and spiritual relationships to money for yourself and for your clients?
So that time period when I looked back on my life and took a good view of my past and realized that I had received little training, and I know I'm not the only one in this situation, it was such a great moment for me because it allowed me to take a leap into a whole field of knowledge that was very terrifying for me personally. I was a creative person, I was a dancer, I was a psychotherapist, and we didn't use that other side of our brain.
No.
So, yes, now you understand. Yes.
I do, because I was in the field of acting and performing, and, you know, that other side of the brain could go take a flying leap most days.
Yes, so there was fear, there was aversion. There was a thought, I couldn't learn this. I wasn't capable of learning it. So for me to start stepping into money, to finances, even from practical first on ups, so learning Quicken, learning QuickBooks, knowing my balance on a daily basis was revolutionary for me. Number one, decreased anxiety tremendously.
Sure.
I could know whether I was at zero, whether I was at 10,000, whether I was at $1.23. I knew where to move, and I can make much clearer decisions from there. And so part of my learning, my training, was learning the practical tools, learning the language.
And also learning what your emotional life and spiritual life around solving these problems were. I mean, that would have to be the basis of your journey.
It was a huge component of my journey. First and foremost, when I looked around, because I, in moments, thought I was the only one who
sure.
had this mess or this shame or this guilt or this anger. And when I looked around at my community, I was seeing people with large bank accounts coming from families of wealth and inheritance. I was seeing people on the other side of the spectrum, and I was seeing pain and struggle and joy, certainly around money, but sometimes almost the identical issues at each end of the spectrum. So that just made me aware that I wasn't the only one here. I wasn't alone. And within that, I started doing my own work. And what is my experience daily around money? What is my experience around making money, around spending money, around saving money? Why am I saving for a little bit and then spending it? What is my relationship to giving? All of these areas. I just started doing a deep research project. I became my own case study.
And mostly the best teachers are those who have done the case studies on themselves, I would say.
Yes. And that was how we were taught in graduate school. We were asked to be our own case study in all the other areas. So this was the last frontier for me to be studying and researching and putting myself through so that I can get to a place where it became obvious that I needed to integrate the psychology field and financial services. I needed to be creating a whole program, a whole process, strategy, method philosophy curriculum that integrated people's relationship to money on a practical, psychological, and spiritual level. And that's why conscious bookkeeping was conceived.
The beautiful story. And when I look at the idea of banking from my own growing up time in Bucyrus, Ohio, I have to say, Peter, that there are some feelings people have about banks. And of course, if you wanted to move forward in the banking industry, you probably had solved some of those things for yourself if you ever had them. But I would say that historically, banks just architecturally were set up to look like fortresses, and creating a bit of historical shock and awe in our DNA, even when a bank has a more modern decor. And also, financial institutions historically have had a poor track record when it comes to the way they treat women, minorities, people with limited resources. I can't wait to walk into your bank in San Francisco and see how you've organized it. And I'm sure that you have people that are very welcoming. And I do know that you live in a green environment in your bank, don't you?
Sure, yeah, absolutely. I think I boil it down to maybe a couple of movies to watch on visions of banking. So there is It's a Wonderful Life, George's Bank. And
yes.
Then there is the Mary Poppins, where the boy tried to go and take his money out, they wouldn't let him. And so obviously we're striving to that former, the old style community bank, the one that your grandfather founded, is one that's, you know, in this last 20 years with the absorption of banks into larger and larger economy of scale, mega banks, we're losing touch. But in some sense, society is also moving away from that style of banking anyways, because we don't live in the same towns for generations anymore. So for a banker to really get to know us, our family, our history, it's harder and harder to do that, even if there is a small community bank out there. So in some sense, we are trying to bring that It's a Wonderful Life bank back into the 21st century, focusing on what community means today. If you look at how communities are forming fast, let's say in the internet, they are around interests and values. Groups form on MySpace, Facebook, or Zods.com, where, again, it's based on what you're interested in, or perhaps your social mission, or perhaps you just love fly fishing. And so community is being redefined, and we are responding in some ways by serving a unique community, the new resource community that believes that money can be a source of investment that powers a set of entrepreneurs to provide for our society, for our marketplace, things that are healthier, things that are greener or more sustainable, environmentally sustainable, or things that are more resource efficient. So,
are you the only green bank in Northern California?
We are. We are the only.
That's pretty
green
special.
Bank. Yeah. We certainly encourage more. So more the merrier. Banking is a more than $18 trillion industry. So we're just a drop in the bucket. But we hope that as much of banking's resources could be put again into supporting great entrepreneurs who are providing our marketplace with things that we need, but things that also are more environmentally sustainable.
So you mentioned the internet, Peter, and I want to bring it up because a lot of people are trying to find out information about refinancing their house or getting mortgages through the internet. And I'm sure that some sites are full of integrity and have a good way to help people process what they want to do. But I know that there are also some really bad practitioners out there that go out of business. They take people's money, lots of fraud happening. In fact, recently there have been some congressional hearings on subprime mortgage practices, for instance, and they were mentioning bankrate.com is a place where people can go. So could you talk to us a little bit about this idea of companies that are financially mugging the poor and the disenfranchised and the people who can't read the fine print or don't even know what the jargon is saying when they sign on the dotted line?
Absolutely. I think it's a real travesty, and people are being boiled down really into numbers, if you will. These are just statistics to feed the machine. And subprime mortgages, in some ways, are very much of what banks shouldn't be doing, at least not doing it in the present sense, and that you don't really know your customers, and you're just trying to get
numbers in the door.
Numbers in the door, and they don't even hold on to these numbers. Many banks that originate subprime mortgages don't actually lend to those mortgages with their own money. They package them and they sell it into the larger mortgage-backed securities market, and it's really almost a hands-off transaction. They collect the fees in between. So ultimately, there is a large body of bonds that have no bankers really attached to them, no relationship.
So these are more predatory lenders who are looking for a quick buck or looking to get in and get out of the market and take what's yours?
Yeah, you know, I think perhaps predatory in a broad application might be too broad. There are certainly some predatory lenders out there. And there are folks who just say, the market will allow us to do this, and hence we do it. And certainly there's a lot of caveat emptor involved here that buyer should be beware that the American dreams in some ways has become somewhat perverse.
Say more about that.
Owning a home is a great ideal, but owning a home by sort of overextending yourself is a choice really on the borrower sometimes that without good education, without perhaps the help of people like Barry and some of her colleagues, that the allure of achieving that dream as soon as you can becomes too strong. And maybe there's also larger issues like societal pressure and so on to attain that dream. Mm-hmm.
And usually the bank owns the house. You don't until a certain time in your life. Or some people now are saying, why should I own that house ever if I don't have anybody to leave it to? Why don't we think of, for instance, reverse mortgages after we're 65 or 70 and let the home take care of us, and then either the bank can take it over at the death of both people, if two people are living there, or it can be designated for an heir or a godchild to buy the house at that point, right?
Sure, yeah. I think, you know, I would say maybe the notion that the bank wants the house is probably a bit of a misconception. Most banks don't want to own that house. They rather people continue to pay on their loans. And the problem is people get into loans that they can't really support. So definitely needs to be better knowledge and education for borrowers not to get into those situations.
And we're going to talk to Barry in the next segment about why people emotionally get entangled in things that aren't really right for their lifestyle and who they are and what they want as part of their life path and their life visions. So the complex relationship with banks and with money has inspired some interesting quotes. Robert Frost once said, "A bank is a place where they lend you an umbrella in fair weather and ask for it back when it begins to rain." And not at your bank, Peter, of course. And Bob Hope said, "A bank is a place that will lend you money if you can prove that you don't need it." So that's another commentary on how some banking systems work. But anyway, Peter and Barry will have a different take on lots of this, and you won't want to miss what they have to say. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment. Do stay tuned.
The Joan Kenley Show. Talk radio your way. Dr. Joan Kenley, taking talk radio to the next level.
Hello, I'm Joan Kenley, and you're back with The Joan Kenley Show, where we're talking today about money matters. We're so glad to continue our conversation with Barry Tesler, the founder of Conscious Bookkeeping, a team of financial therapists, coaches, and bookkeepers who help people transform their relationship with money. And Peter Liu is the founder and vice chairman of New Resource Bank in San Francisco, an innovative commercial bank whose primary mission is to serve the needs of green entrepreneurs and sustainable businesses. In fact, he's the only green bank in San Francisco. And there is a Native American proverb that says, "Only when the last tree has died, the last river has been poisoned, and the last fish has been caught, will we realize we cannot eat money." So that's sort of one of our green messages today. But Peter, I'd like to learn more from you now about how you are financing projects and seeking appropriate investors within the green mission that your bank has. And the fact that your walls and your materials are all green building, and some of the things you're offering with sun power and so on.
Yeah, I think, you know, our core focus is to finance sustainable resources in our community. And we do it in two ways. One is to focus on green entrepreneurs and green businesses and really deliver more value to them through our lending by having a greater knowledge of their industry, of their specific business, because of our unique focus. So I'll give you some examples. In the green building arena, we offer green builders more money at a lower cost, very specifically and tangibly. So when a builder comes to us for a loan, we'll always give them two offers. Now, one is for a conventional, and the other is for a green building. If they take a leadership design position on that green building, we will give them a lower interest rate, and then also we'll give them more loan to value. So what that means is that for the same amount of equity, they can build more building, or conversely, they can build the same building with less equity, which gives them a higher equity return. So they can actually make more money by building green.
So are contractors beating down your door? I mean, it sounds like such a great idea.
Yeah, it's definitely getting a lot of interest, not only from contractors, but also from nonprofit organizations and others who are looking to have their own buildings or businesses. And this is really an added incentive for the many others, in addition to the many others, to go green on their building.
Well, it's interesting that just last night I heard about the Orchard Park Hotel in San Francisco, and it's one of the four green hotels in the country. And see, now San Francisco has a green bank and it has a green hotel. And it's very interesting to see how San Francisco has sort of led the way in some of these industries, because we do have people that are in conversation about what's going to help the planet move to the next level of safety that Al Gore is talking about in Inconvenient Truth. He says we have this 10-year window, and if people get on board and if it becomes the thing to do, it could be the best thing that's happened in the last, you know, 50 years in terms of saving the planet, don't you think?
Yes, absolutely. I think this brings up another part of our mission in terms of financing sustainable resources in our community. We intend to take the green to the community. As a FDIC-insured bank, we have to serve our community at large. We can't just serve only green businesses, because with that federal deposit insurance, we have to provide our lending broadly to everybody that can access us in our community. So neither race, religion, gender, we have to serve them. But when we do that, we do have this opportunity, again, to take the green to the community.
And educate.
Exactly. And here's an example. I'll stay on the real estate sector. Our senior vice president for construction and real estate lending is actually taking conventional developers to green building conferences and seminars to show them how green can be beautiful, it can be strong, and more importantly for them, it could be more marketable.
And economical, too.
Economical. And this exposure is actually turning them towards developing green in their next projects. So that's the exciting part. And in terms of, you know, allowing investors to participate in that, we as a bank really offer a somewhat no-brainer for them. Because, again, when you deposit money at this bank, your money is completely safe and sound because there's federal deposit insurance on it. So there's no fear of loss. We actually provide higher than many of our competitors' rates in terms of interest rates. And so our depositors get the sense that they're getting more for their dollars.
And I also noticed in the information about you, Peter, is that your bank ATM cards are not being charged at other bank ATMs around the country, so that $1.50 or $2 charge that people get when they go to other banks to get their cash out isn't applicable with your card.
Right. Yeah. I think this is one of our efforts to provide a new standard of customer service. And part of that is, instead of our customers having to find their own home ATM, drive around and go and get money out, they can use any bank ATM in the world and not have to pay for it. We rebate the fees. It works for us because we don't have to go out and build as many branches and as many ATMs as a new bank.
So when we come back then to you, Barry, and people have to make so many decisions about how to use their money, what they feel about using their money, what is involved in your financial therapy, value-based bookkeeping, and life visioning as you help people develop a more sustainable relationship with their finances. I mean, it is sort of a green way to look at money, isn't it?
It is. And one way of defining it would be sustainability. And that's one of the areas. Some other areas are that our mission, our intention when we're working with individuals, couples, families, and some budding organizations is that we're wanting to bring more consciousness to people. And I know that's defined on many different levels. Other people say that they want to have a healthy relationship with money, or they want to bring more clarity. Mm-hmm. They want to know what the numbers are.
Right.
How is it coming in? Where is it going? I don't know. We get so many people not knowing or not knowing what their debt is, just simply knowing, bringing more clarity to the numbers. Other people are looking for intimacy. They're wanting to know why they have such strong reactions on a daily basis. So for some people, they want more intimacy. For other people, it's more knowledge.
And some people are angry about money. Some people are in denial. Some people really don't even want to think about it. And I know that that's where your help is probably invaluable, because we have to think about our money. And the Maslow guide of higher consciousness and basic understanding of what takes care of us in terms of survival, we have to be able to pay our rent in this world in order to get clean and clear about our higher purposes. So we have to take care of business, but not hate doing it.
And that's where we each need to determine what is the right relationship to money. It's not giving it too much attention where we're thinking about it all day long. But
it's not being stingy.
And not being stingy, exactly, not being stingy, but not be overly generous
exactly.
as well. You don't want to go to either end of the spectrum.
Absolutely not,
right?
No. So Barry, you've talked about clarity, intimacy, and knowledge as three of the five categories of inquiry that you like to do with a client. Why don't you talk about ease and success?
And I'm going to say one more thing about knowledge.
Okay.
Because this is really where the rubber meets the road. It's learning the practical language. And for many of us, this is the missing piece, or this is the place where we're afraid of, or we mm-hmm. go asleep, right? So that's the knowledge. To move on to ease and success, ease, I'm always curious how each of us defines ease and how we imagine arriving at a place of ease. Is it a certain amount of money in the bank? Is it a certain amount of savings? Is it simply knowing what your balance is every day? Would that allow you to arrive into a place of ease? We're all going to be different. Is ease something that we land, we hit on, and then we're there for the rest of our lives? So what do we imagine ease feeling like, and what do we need to do? For some of us, it's the knowledge or setting up the practical system that will help us arrive at ease. Now, success, well, it needs to be defined on a few different levels, too. We're all different. How do we define success? Again, is it a certain amount of money in the bank? Is it donating a certain amount per year? Is it having relatively calm conversations with our spouses, with our family around money, with our children around money? Would it be leaving a career, taking that leap and jumping over and starting our own initiative? Would that be successful? So we need to define each of these for ourselves.
Of course, but also I was listening to a program the other day that was talking about financial fibbing between spouses about what the spending habits were, and that people were more willing to admit to an affair or being attracted to somebody else than they would like to admit about their secret spending habits that they want to keep from their other, you know, loved one. And it's because that there is some shame about not being able to either control spending or to make selective spending, or when people go out and do emotional spending just to feel better. And I think that you have to look at all those parts of the pictures too, don't you, Barry? And being honest with whoever you're living with, whether it's a spouse or a brother and sister or a friend or a special other.
I do, and we call that transparency.
Mm-hmm.
And how can we first be transparent with ourselves? That's a huge, significant step, meaning look at our numbers, looking at our emotional, psychological spending patterns, making money and giving, etc. We need to do that work for ourselves first, and then from there, we can move into sitting down with our partners and eating a little bit of chocolate,
mm-hmm.
lighting
yes.
a candle,
sure,
whatever you got to do, you know, to have fun, to sit down, to start having these conversations with our partner. And I have a really fun way of getting partners getting couples into that conversation for that first time.
Well, that's really good. Okay. And in fact, I'm sure that Peter, the employees in your bank have to talk about emotional issues sometimes when mm-hmm. they're not even prepared to talk about how people might be fighting about money or thinking about money. And I have a great story to tell in the next segment about what a woman was doing with some of her money her husband didn't know about. So people will have to stay tuned. So anyway, Nell Newman, daughter of actor Paul Newman and the co-founder of Newman's Organics, very successful company, once said that cultivating a generous spirit starts with mindfulness. Mindfulness, simply stated, means paying attention to what is actually happening and what is really going on, what we've been talking about here. What is the transparency? What's going on? Well, you won't want to miss our final segment. And to do that, you have to just stay put. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Ready for more? Dr. Joan Kenley continues in a moment. Log on to joankenley.com, that's K-E-N-L-E-Y, to learn more and listen to archived shows. Invite your friends and family to listen to The Joan Kenley Show.
Hello, I'm Joan Kenley, back with The Joan Kenley Show, and we're continuing our focus about money matters. As we head into the home stretch of today's program with Barry Tesler and Peter Liu, I want to share with you a growing trend known as socially responsible investing. It's investing with your heart and your mind and with your friendly banker and with your friendly financial advisor and also with your financial counselor. So we have with us people who can talk to you about all of those ideas when you want to invest your own money and when you want to be feeling that you're following a certain ethical path and a moral path and a value path with the money that you have to invest. And when you become socially responsible with your dollars, you want to at the same time get a good return, of course. And what you may think of as responsible may need some investigating. The goal here is to find someone that will help you follow the trail where your money is going to go when it leaves your pocket or your checkbook. And then make informed decisions that feel right for you. It's a relationship. What is your relationship with money? It says waste your money and you're only out of money, but waste your time and you've lost part of your life. So we want to keep your life on track and ask Barry right now, regardless of someone's financial circumstances, what would be that first step toward shifting someone's relationship to money?
The three doorways, the first one is financial therapy. The second doorway is values-based bookkeeping. And the third doorway is your vision.
So tell us more about each one of those doorways.
So financial therapy in a nutshell is bringing more awareness and understanding to your relationship to money on all levels and going back to your past. Not getting stuck there, but going back a little bit and trying to understand who raised me, what were the messages and patterns that they were passing down based on what they learned, based on their ethnicity, based on religion, based on economic class. All these areas influence our parents' relationship to money and the messages and patterns that are being passed down to us. So important to go back just a little bit, to do a little deep sea diving, to bring up some of those golden nuggets so we can start pulling back the veil so we can see currently why we're doing what we're doing around money and what do we learn from our family that's working and what's clearly not working that we need to let go of so that we can step into a whole next level.
Well, a great example of that is my friend who did something with her money because in the back of her mind, though she had never been in a compromised situation with her finances, she had this idea that she never wanted to become a bag lady, and she was as far from that as you could imagine. But she decided that she would start putting some money away from the groceries under her mattress. And so she just kept doing that and doing that and doing that. And one day they were going to change the bedroom and move that bed into another room, and her husband lifts up the mattress, and there's this whole wad of money all over the first level of the mattress. And he was so brilliant. He just looked at her, didn't say a word, and they continued moving the mattress. And so,
how compassionate and loving.
I thought
of
so.
Him.
It's just a beautiful story. I mean, it was just letting her do what she needed to do. Of course, it wasn't earning the interest that it could have earned in Peter's bank, but I thought it was just something that made her feel good. And I think that's a lot of what we're talking about. How do you feel good about what you're doing with some of your money choices?
Which leads right into the next doorway, the bookkeeping doorway, which we call creating a values-based bookkeeping system. Mm-hmm. So this certainly ties into Peter's work in socially responsible investing. One of the first things that people can do, an individual, and this is great for couples and great for families, is you sit down and identify what your values are. You sit quietly, you make a whole list of whatever's important to you. Courage, creativity, spending time in the woods, intimacy, shoes, you know, whatever your thing is that makes you happy, you make a list on one side of the page.
And don't be embarrassed to put it all down.
Exactly. You gotta let yourself just have fun, you know, let this be fun. And then the other side of the page, we want to look at all the ways that we spend our money and all of those very practical names: rent, mortgage, utilities, groceries. Okay? Kind of boring names, but they're fine for some of us. And what we're doing here is that we want to start changing those names. We want to rename rent or mortgage to represent a deeper value for us.
And give us an idea of what that might be.
Everyone's so different. I've heard rent or mortgage really means sanctuary or refuge or safety or security. Or how about this, love shack? someone told me that one.
I like it.
Isn't that fun? Yeah. So imagine changing the name of your rent or your mortgage to love shack or sanctuary refuge. And it changes. It just shifts perspective ever so slightly. You're choosing the name. You're putting intention in it. You're making your own. It shifts it ever so slightly that it affects people in very different ways. But for some, it shifts it from that nasty bill to every time I spend my money in this way, I'm in alignment with my value of sanctuary. I'm in alignment with my value of this. So we have so many examples, you know, renaming a debt to my Italian experience. That was this one person's reality. She found herself having the desire and energy to pay that off. So by renaming all of our expense categories, some of our income categories, we can create a values-based bookkeeping system that puts our intention in it. And we can see when we print out those reports at the end of the month that we do monthly and yearly, are we in alignment with our values? Are we spending our money in alignment with our values? Are we making our money in alignment with our values? And are we living our vision?
And that's creative and fun.
It's very creative. It's dynamic, creative, and fun. And it dispels the belief that bookkeeping is boring and dry.
Yes. And so the third gateway after that fun one is a life vision.
And there are two things in this area. One, we all come into the world unique. Mm-hmm. And we are here to identify what our uniqueness is and to put that into a vision or a dream, whether we're raising a family, whether we're starting an initiative in the larger world. And then we take that vision and dream and we put it right into our bookkeeping system, right, which we call a sacred vessel.
I love that.
If that works for you, right?
Yes.
Maybe two out there. Put it in your sacred vessel and then use the sacred vessel, the bookkeeping, on a daily, on a weekly, monthly, yearly basis to help you manifest whatever vision or dream you want to be creating and actualizing.
What a creative, creative way to look at your relationship with money. And it looks like it has great ways of making money happen more proactively in your life, but also more consciously and, as you said earlier, transparently. So I'm going to go back to Peter now to ask about the transparency in your bank and in your vision about where you see your bank going and growing and what influence you might be having on other banks, not only in this community, but across the country.
Sure. Yeah, I think before I launch into that, I really love what Barry said. So I'm looking forward to making my Love Shack Funland payment.
There you go.
For my mortgage. But also continuing her theme, I would love to sort of put a descriptor or vision on the money that comes into this bank. And it really means progress and opportunity. And the progress towards sustainability is what the community of people that founded this bank has the vision for this bank.
And how did you find that community of people that invested in your bank in the very first place?
It's really people that came together through my relationship and through the relationships of some of the co-founders who truly believe that the movement of sustainability is now becoming a marketplace. And it's at that marketplace where the difference is going to be made. Because
the tipping point in time.
Correct, yes. And in that community includes wonderful entrepreneurs who have founded great companies like Sybase or Ophoto, all the way down to Ken Lee and his partner Carol, who still works out of their living room, selling great, wonderful rice products under Lotus Foods. So it's not just about the size of the business. It's about all kinds of businesses working together in somewhat concert, but in a different concert.
In friendship and relationship.
Correct, yeah. In a way that comes from a lot of different perspectives. When I talk about concert, there's two kinds of concerts that people enjoy. One is the symphonic one. In a symphonic concert, everybody plays off the same sheet music.
That's
it's
true.
Very precise. Mm-hmm. But in Gus Speth's vision, Gus is one of the co-founders of the Natural Resources Defense Council and also the dean of the Yale School of Forestry. He believes sustainability will happen via a jazz concert. So a jazz concert means that this bank, our entrepreneurs that we serve, people like Barry and the people that she counsel, all together we can play off the same one riff, but play our own instruments our own way and create the same beautiful music.
That's a great analogy.
So in some ways, that's the vision for our bank. We don't mind if other green banks pops up in the country, and we think more the merrier. We applaud Bank of America's efforts, even though it's a small start to what's a big possibility. So we really look forward to, again, providing our depositors with a very safe and sound way to let their money do their talking, if you will.
And they can come to you for all kinds of advice. I can imagine that people could come in and say, not just what can they do with their home, but what can they do in terms of what they think might be a good green investment, because I myself don't know what a good green investment is. Mm-hmm. If you go down the list of what are advertised as green investors, we have a whole portfolio and it's supposed to be totally green. But we don't know how to investigate those companies to find out if they're walking their talk at every level of green, which we are imagining for them. So I would imagine if we would come into your bank with our portfolio, you could give us some advice about whether this company is not only green to the roots, but also making good profitability too.
Sure, yeah, I think that's the beauty of our community. It's growing every day. There are financial service advisor who are our clients or our shareholders who can provide those valuable service. And we even have clients who can just help a homeowner green their homes in very simple ways.
Well, we want people to go to your website to look at your SunPower program and also some of the other ways that you can not even imagine how economical they can be in partnership with the Inner Resources Bank to make a lot of green things happen to your home. And your website is?
It's newresourcebank.com.
And your website, Barry?
So you can go to consciousbookkeeping.com, and bookkeeping is two O's, two K's, two E's. It's a fun word, like Mississippi. Right?
Yes.
And our website is a great resource for books, for our free teleclasses, for all of our events and our services. It's a wonderful place to go.
Terrific. And on our website, we will be able to link up with both Peter and with Barry and all the great stuff that they do and some other suggestions as well. So when it comes to banking, audience, be more proactive. Be more proactive with the people who are handling your money and how you are handling money for yourself. And remember, the banks are supposed to work for you. And when it comes to relating to money, look inside. What would you like to change? Do you need help to change? How many ways can we say it? Money matters. Money matters. And money matters. But Barry and Peter, thank you so much for sharing some of your ideas with us that matter most to you. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
I hate to say we have to close, but I also want to say thanks for listening. We want you to know that The Joan Kenley Show brings you conversation radio that's co-created for your listening pleasure with our guests. You can find out more about today's subject on my website, joankenley.com. That's K-E-N-L-E-Y, where all our shows are archived, downloadable, and podcastable 24/7. We're also on iTunes. Huge thanks go to those who made this show possible, Peter B. Collins and Christy Healy, and here in the studio, Daniel Fletcher, engineer and technical producer. This is Joan Kenley inviting you to keep listening, and we'll keep you in the conversation.